Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 311, recorded November 15th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers. Excuse me while I adjust the microphone here. There, maybe that'll sound better. All right. Well, we have several people who have contributed this week. Who have we got?
We have Tom in Evesham, UK, and Tom in Provo here in Utah. So we have the tale of two Toms.
Oh,
do I get the alliteration award? And Ray in Virginia.
Right, and we also have some things that we would like to talk about as well.
Do you want to go first, or should we?
Sure.
Why don't you go first?
Well, today I finished stripping the tank, the 37-gallon goldfish tank, and cleaned it out.
Stripping it of the sealant.
The silicone.
From when it was leaking.
Stripped it out, and with a razor, you know, what do you call those things?
Razor scrapery.
A razor scraper, that's the word.
You have to say doodle, or it's not official.
Oh, okay.
Razor scrapery doodle thing.
Oh, I like that better, maybe.
Yeah, that's totally marketable.
And then I used rubbing alcohol and then acetone to get the remnants off the glass. And then I taped it up to leave the proper space with painter's tape. And then the mess that I made after that, I don't even want to talk about it almost.
I haven't seen it yet.
It wasn't very fun.
I just got home.
Yeah, that tank is really deep. It's like 23 inches deep, and so reaching down to the bottom of it with a caulking gun and trying not to bump into things and stuff is rather difficult. I mean, I think I got it sealed. We'll see.
I hope.
Part of the frustration comes from the fact that I haven't been able to get to it for various reasons. For how long has it been? When it's been over a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
A week and a half, about, since it started leaking. And really wanted to seal it earlier. We've had unseasonably warm weather here, which
is
nice to be able to, it's nice in lots of ways. Not the least of which is that it makes sealing a tank easier because you can actually do it outside. So, it's going to snow most likely tomorrow evening. So, as soon as I got back from work, I started work on that pretty much, and so I could get it done in time. So, it'll have 24 hours before it gets too cold because you really can't let the silicone stay out in the cold. Or it'll shrink and crack, and it
becomes brittle. Defeat the point.
It'll have problems anyway. Maybe not crack, but it will have problems. It can mess up the seal as it shrinks. So, hopefully, it will work. I'm thinking I might have to do is tomorrow, once the 24 hours have elapsed, bring it in the house, set it up in the laundry room on the stand, and then fill it up in there. Because if it leaks, it'll go down the drain.
Yeah.
Might ruin the stand. But it'll go down the drain, and that's something. So, I don't know, it's kind of a frustrating business, just sealing the tank, it being as large as it is, or as tall as it is. I think if it were a shallower tank, it wouldn't be nearly as difficult to deal with, but, oh well, we'll see how it goes. It has been a long time since I have resealed the tank, because, partly I think it was because of timing when we moved. The tanks we had before we moved weren't old enough to need to be sealed, and when we moved to Hawaii, we couldn't bring any tanks with us.
Long enough for them to get
and then
old.
The tanks we had there, you know, we didn't have them long enough for it to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got back, we got some tanks, and then they're just now getting to that age where, you know, sealing them is a thing. So, even though I've been keeping tanks for a very, very long time, and I do have some tanks that I've never even had to seal, and they're doing fine, but the bigger they are, the deeper they are.
The more stress.
The more stress and the more issues you have. So I think, though, what I'm going to start doing is, with the other tanks that I have that are old, I'm just going to, in the summer, just going to
cycle through them and reseal
a bunch of them, and then maybe do, I don't know, maybe do half of next year and then the next half the next year, and then I won't have to worry about them for a long time.
That's a good idea.
Something like that. Okay, other things that are going on. I know that I mentioned last time the multis and the bad luck we had with that, or the bad situation we had. I don't know if I can call it bad luck, but how with the cyanobacteria and the treatment, and we lost quite a few of them. And there was one in the main tank that seems to have survived it just fine. And then there were two that I removed, one because it was had the same sort of body shape that like a balloon molly has, where it's got kind of a swollen belly and a shortened spine. And then one was a very aggressive male who has a mouth that seems to be perpetually open. He can never close it properly. Mm. And I didn't want those two contributing genetically to the, the
gene pool
in the, I guess contributing genetically to the gene pool is redundant, which is why I was hesitating
That's
to say
okay.
that, but not your fault. It's because I said genetically first.
It's okay. I can have the alliteration award and the redundancy award.
Well, it's kind of, I think it's my fault this time. I messed it up.
No, I said it and then you said it.
Oh, wow.
Maybe
I don't know.
You didn't notice.
Maybe not. I don't
but
know.
But look, we've got it recorded.
We do, so we could always go back and check it out. Anyway, I didn't want those particular fish contributing to the gene pool. And that's why I removed them to another tank. And I put a couple shells in there so that they would be happy. And they obviously were very happy because they produced fry. And I think I mentioned that I had seen just one little fry in the main tank before I moved them. And I moved that little fry in the shell. But now there are more. There are at least six. And I think it's a different batch. I'm not sure what happened to that first one, if it's among them and it's just hard to tell the size difference or whatever. But there are at least six fry. And it's been interesting. I did catch some of them on video, kind of a close-up video. Interesting to see how the female, she doesn't take care of them the same way that certain cichlids will. I mean, she doesn't put them into her mouth or anything. But she seems to be picking up detritus in the area around them and spitting it out, like trying to make sure they're getting food. She seems to be doing that. She also seems to go in search of them when they wander. And she definitely protects them when any other fish get too close. She just has maintained a perimeter around the shell there and seems to, she'll frighten other fish off from that area. And the male does the same thing. He seems to protect the area. It's just he's further out, so his perimeter is wider than hers. But they both seem to be protecting the area. It's interesting to watch. And the little fry seem perfectly healthy. I suspect that they're carrying, one copy of the gene that their mother has, from what little I understand of that sort of issue where you have the shortened or the crooked spine and the swollen abdomen. I may have mentioned this before, but I think it's, at least in convict cichlids from what I've read, it is a trait that only shows up, it's a recessive trait, and so you have to have two copies of the gene. So it's likely that these fish that she's produced look fine, but any offspring they're to have, if they were to interbreed with each other as siblings, probably manifested. So I'm not sure what to do. I took them out thinking, oh, they're never going to breed in a tank like this, but they did. So we'll see. And
just
I also
stinkers.
Also ended up getting new multis to replace the ones that had passed on, and they seem to be doing really well. I got six from a hobbyist slash breeder. His establishment is called All Red Aquatics. It's about a little over an hour south of here, I think, and we were down further south than that, so I arranged to drop by there on the way back, and he had a nice setup with various types of cichlids, mostly like Tanganyika Malawi cichlids, but some other types too, and it was fun to see those. And he got some fish. He said that his supplier started his colony with males from three different sources, so they should be a pretty robust, genetically diverse group. And they look great, and they seem to be settling in very nicely. And there are females trying to entice the males into their shells and stuff, so I should expect some fry from them pretty soon. And because I'm adding my male that I already had that did well and survived the ordeal that all the other fish did not, into there, we should have some pretty good genes.
Yeah, sounds good. Much more hopeful.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, shall we go to our contributors?
Yes.
Okay, we've got Tom and Evesham UK first. It says, hello, Russ and Kelly. I've got no questions for you, but wanted to update you on what I've been up to. My sickly platy survived. I treated the tank with various treatments.
Uh-oh.
And the iPad just chose that moment to time out. Okay. Oh.
No, no. Sorry, folks.
Sorry, this is a chronic case of me pushing the wrong buttons.
There we go. We're good.
Okay. I treated the tank with various treatments, then upgraded the little guys to a bigger 30-liter bio-orb?
Bio-orb.
Bio-orb, okay. And a better pump. I've also widened their diet to include more fresh vegetables. Since then, they've been getting by nicely. I've attached a picture of their new home,
which we will put on the show page, mm-hmm. so you can check it out.
I've also been hard at work on my 30-gallon planted tank, which I first emailed you about. I've got 5 Harlequin Rasbora and 3 Otos in there now. I'm going to expand the shoal of Rasbora to 8 this week. Then I'm going to have a long think about what I want to do next. I'm torn between a shoal of Neon Tetras or Dwarf Grammy. After weeks of tinkering with my light, CO2 and nutrients, I've finally got an initial explosion of algae to sensible levels. I probably still need some shrimp cleanup, so I'm probably favoring the tetras. I've also got a crowd of promiscuous snails, which I want to thin out. I would just like to say I think promiscuous snails is a great phrase, and it would probably be a good band name.
Hmm, I can see that. They'd have to play really slow music.
Yes, but somewhat provocatively.
Okay.
Because they're promiscuous snails.
Yeah.
That's like snail burlesque.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not going to go there anymore. I think a few assassin snails will be needed to get things in order. Anyway, keep up the good work, Tom.
Well, assassin snails should certainly do the job. You know,
we've got assassin snails and we've got like promiscuous snails singing slow...
Slightly provocative,
like blues music or something. And then we've got assassin snails coming in, like these are like the mafia snails coming in and they run the joint. And
hey, boss, you want I should make him dead?
Yeah, see, it would be like a great graphic novel. Somebody should make a very silly graphic novel out of this.
Wow, that would be a silly graphic novel indeed. Although, I've seen weirder, probably.
That's okay. It's my job to say weird things on this show.
That's true. Well, I'm just going to throw something out there, Tom, about your 30-gallon planted tank. Although I think it sounds really nice, I'm wondering, bringing your shoal of reservoirs up to a larger number sounds like a really good idea. And I'm just giving the idea that maybe if you put neons in there, you might lose
the effect of
some
the
of the effects of the reservoirs as a shoal.
I was kind of thinking that too, yeah. Actually. Although I also applaud the use of the word shoal.
Yeah, it is a nice word.
That's a good word.
You know, it's used less. I'm not going to say it's not used in the U.S., but it's used less.
Well, at least for freshwater fish.
Yeah.
I we use it more for fish in the wild rather than fish
in
the aquariums.
That's true. Yeah. But there is a difference in a shoal and a school. One's tighter and more... organized and one's less so. But
your shoal less organized or more organized?
I can never remember which one is which. Oh. But at least I can't at the moment. It's not necessarily going to happen. And the larger the tank you have, the less, you know, it might interfere. But when you have different species in there, sometimes their dynamics will change the way things work. But I do love rasboras and how they shoal kind of, they're fairly good at that, staying together. Whereas neons, not as much. They more like hang around. But they will some, but not quite as tightly in my experience anyway. And if it's true though, if you're gonna put a dwarf gourami in there with the shrimp, you might not have very many shrimp for very long. So I can see why you might wanna do it the other way. Anyway, let us know how that goes. And now let's go to Tom in Provo. Oh, there was another email he sent Tom in Provo.
Tom
in Provo. Okay. And the pictures we put on last week's show page didn't quite work, so he sent them again.
Oh, okay.
And I will try to put them
naughty
up
naughty technical difficulties.
Yeah, I think now that he said that, I may know why that happened, and I think we can prevent it from happening again. But I'll try to get that fixed.
Let's read his email. Because I have noticed that Placos come in various colors. Those currently in my tank, 2 females, are very distinctly orange. Are these the same species as those that are variegated or darker in color? You have mentioned that the darker variations will interbreed. If I were to get a darker male placo, would it cross with the orange females? What color might the offspring be? Perhaps this is just something that I would have to experiment with.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. There are many, many, many placos, as you're probably aware, many species of placos, but I think in this case, what you're probably referring to is just color morphs of the bristlenose placo, which may or may not be a complex of species, or at this point may be something like what the aquarium version of freshwater angelfish has now become. It's not really, unless you get wild caught or pure, you know, bred varieties that have come from the wild, all the stock comes from the wild, has been regulated that way. If you just get an angelfish in general, it's usually a mix of several species. Probably at least three species of angelfish have contributed to the gene pool of the common varieties of, you know, pet store angelfish. That may or may not be the case for bristlenose placos, but I kind of suspect it might be. But at any rate, the ones you're talking about, like, they're the calico versions, they're just the normal wild types, they're albinos, they're the orange and super reds and different things, and they're long fin versions of things going on. And all of those that I just mentioned seem to be able to interbreed with one another. They're probably either the same species or one of these, you know, fertile hybrids that has existed for a while in the hobby, and it would be hard to track down what its ancestors originally were exactly. But yeah, calicos, for example, I purchased a calico years ago, and then I purchased an albino, calico male, albino female. They had offspring. The offspring were mostly wild types, as I recall, but their offspring in turn yielded quite a few albinos as well as some calicos. And so I highly suspect that your distinctly orange placos could indeed interbreed with a calico or a wild type or an albino. I'm not sure what you'd get, though. I'm not sure what,
the genetics of that. Background, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's a dominant trait, the orange, if it's dominant or recessive. I don't know. The albino was recessive because, you know, none of them showed up in that first generation, and about 25% showed up in the next one. Calico seemed to be something else. I'm not exactly sure what that was yet. I didn't really track it down. I just noticed, and we got calicos and we got albinos. We gave a number of young to one of our daughter's teachers, and they had a 55-gallon tank in the classroom there, and she had all kinds of different, she'd get albinos and calicos and everything too, and there'd been several generations of inbreeding going on there. And anyway, you could experiment with it if you were to get, you said you have two females, so if you were to get a wild type male or a calico male or an albino male, it'd be interesting to see what you get, but I'm pretty sure you could get babies either way.
Which is the fun part.
Yep.
Okay. He says, I am also wondering if any Aquarimaxers participate in the annual AGA Aquatic Gardeners Contest. And he put the website there that we can share. Mm-hmm. If so, I would be interested in knowing what their experiences were. I sometimes wonder whether those who judge the contest are aware of how easily digital photos can be manipulated online.
Yeah.
So what is this contest? It sounds like it's a photography contest.
Well, it's an aquascaping contest.
Oh, okay.
AGA stands for Aquatic Gardeners Association, if I remember correctly, and they do some great stuff. Amazingly beautiful tanks. I think I've shown you pictures of some of them. Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember the Hobbit one?
Oh,
the Hobbit door and the party tree and whatever? Mm-hmm. Things like that, where not always like thematic like mm-hmm. that, but where they're beautiful tanks, where the main idea of the tank is it's aquascape. It's okay. They'll keep fish in them, but
just to contribute first and to foremost, whatever picture that they're making.
First and foremost, they're an aquascape tank, and then, you know, the fish are part of that, but they're not necessarily the focus of the aquascape. It's more the focus, and the fish are there to contribute to it, I guess. Hopefully I'm representing that correctly.
I think we got it.
But there's some beautiful stuff, and everyone should check it out if you haven't yet. And even if you have, go check it out again, because every year they produce some fantastic things. One thing that I always find amazing is they'll have different size divisions in their contest for mm-hmm. tanks. And generally, the idea seems to be to make the tank appear bigger than it is, like the landscape or the aquascape,
mm-hmm.
to mimic a really large landscape or something like that. And so they'll scale things, they'll use tiny, kind of tiny like plants and tiny, tiny fish. Yeah, it gives that sort of impression, a miniaturized landscape, and it's fantastic. Sometimes you look at a 5-gallon tank and it looks much bigger, but you don't have anything to compare it to because they've scaled everything in that tank, mm-hmm. so it looks much bigger. Fantastic stuff.
Cool. Well, has there been problems in the past with them being digitally altered?
I don't know. That's a good question. He's probably just referring to the fact that these days with Photoshop and all sorts of things like that, it would be a lot easier now to take a photo that had some imperfections and make it look as if it did not mm-hmm. than it used to be. And so entering such a contest with a doctored photo might yield some inaccurate results. So it's a good point. I don't know if it's ever happened, but... Okay, we have one more.
Okay, the other Tom. Tom and Provo.
No, we just finished that.
Sorry.
No. We're going to talk about Ray. Ray in
right
Virginia.
At the top of the page.
At least Russ. I think he's Virginia.
Yeah, Ray in the Virginia. He says, Russ, for the Virginia Tech Entomology Department, the beetles I submitted are not Tenebrio obscurus. See this link for a description of that species. They look different from the beetles in your video on YouTube. I have an entomology technician on the trail of the species. She finds a source, I'll let you know. She thinks she actually may have received some mixed with regular mealworms at one time. She suggested contacting Southern Mealworm Farming as a possible source of obscurus.
So, the worm I have, and the worm that I made videos about, as Tenebrio obscurus, because that's how I bought it, was actually not that worm, or that bug, that beetle.
Naughty beetles.
So, I'm going to have to... I did post to my most recent... culturing video, I added to the description that, you know, some information about this, but I need to go in and I'm going to release another video that explains it as part of that playlist and, you know, update some of the other data so that people don't get confused. I don't want to, you know, keep it going. So I appreciate very much what Ray has done by providing me some information on that, and now I will try to make sure I don't confuse anybody else.
Yep, it's good.
Well, I think that's about it for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really excited to have some multis that look like they're going to be reproducing in my main tank, and it's just kind of fun that the other one's reproducing, even though I'm not sure what to do about that now because I was trying to keep them from reproducing. But, you know, when life finds a way like that, you just kind of got to admire a fish like that.
See what they come up with.
And she is a cute little fish. I mean, she's only about 1/2 inch long, total mm-hmm. length, maybe a little bit longer.
She's plucky.
Yeah, she's got pluck. And that is to be admired. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next time,
may the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquaramax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquaramax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquaramax.com.